Hello and welcome to May's Solving History. I'm Emily.
And I'm Gemma. In this podcast, we're going to look at the still unsolved disappearance of Dorothy Arnold. As always, we will give you the details of the case and the possible theories, and then we want you to tell us what you think happened. Now, though this case isn't gory, that's Emily's department, I am giving trigger warnings for mentions of suicide and abortion.
Okay, so tell us about Dorothy.
Dorothy Harriet Camille Arnold was born on the 1st of July, 1885. She was the second of four children, born to Francis Rose Arnold and his wife Mary Martha Parks Arnold. The family were well respected and wealthy. Francis, who was a Harvard graduate, was a senior partner of F.R. Arnold & Co., a company that imported, quote, fancy goods. And her uncle was the Supreme Court Justice Rufus W. Peckham. Dorothy was educated at the Belton School for Girls in New York City and attended Bryn Mawr College in Pennsylvania, where she majored in literature and language. After graduating in 1905, she returned to live with her family in their home at 108 East 79th Street while she attempted to begin a career as a writer. Dorothy also had a reputation as a prestigious society girl. Sounds like a pretty good life so far, right?
I mean, she's kind of living the dream at the moment. So when did she go missing?
On the 12th of December 1910, Dorothy told her mother she was going shopping to find a dress to wear to her sister Marjorie's upcoming debutante party. Her mother offered to accompany her, but Dorothy declined and instead said she would call once she had found a dress she liked, and then her mother could come and see it. She left the house around 11 a.m. wearing her muff and carrying between $25 and $30, which is about $800 in today's money. Having left home, Dorothy walked to the Park and Tilford store at the corner of 5th Avenue and 59th Street, where at approximately 12, she charged a half-pound box of chocolates to her account. From there, she walked 22 blocks to Brunito's bookstore at 27th Street and 5th Avenue. There, she bought Engaged Girl sketches by Emily Calvin Blake and bumped into her friend Gladys King. The two chatted for a while before they going their separate ways. Gladys recalled that Dorothy told her she was, quote, going to walk home through Central Park. By early evening, the Arnolds were growing concerned as Dorothy had missed dinner without informing them, something that was really out of character for her. They began calling her friends to see if she was with any of them or if they knew her whereabouts, but came up empty. Shortly after midnight on the 13th, Elsie Henry, a friend of Dorothy's, called the Arnold house, asking if Dorothy had returned. She later said that Mary, that's Dorothy's mother, told her that Dorothy had returned home, and after Elsie asked to speak to her, quote, Mary hesitated and claimed Dorothy had gone to bed with a headache. Fearing that their daughter's disappearance would draw unwanted media attention and become, quote, socially embarrassing, the Arnold family didn't call the police for several weeks.
Wait, they didn't call the police for several weeks? Why?
We don't know for certain, but it suggested that they wanted to avoid a scandal like that suffered by the Boas family. In 1909, their 13-year-old daughter, Adele, was reported missing from Central Park. However, it turned out she'd run away to Boston and later returned home. Seeing how the Boas family, who were in the same social class as them, were shamed in the press and gossiped about, it's possible the Arnold family wanted to avoid that.
So did they do anything?
The morning after Dorothy's disappearance, they contacted John S. Keith, a family friend and lawyer. When he arrived that morning, he searched Dorothy's bedroom and discovered that all of her clothes and personal belongings were in her room. During his search, he also found personal letters with foreign postmarks in her desk, two folders for transatlantic ocean liners on the desk, and burned papers in the fireplace, which he presumed were rejected manuscripts she had submitted to McClure's magazine. He spent the next few weeks visiting jails, hospitals, and even morgues in New York City, Philadelphia, and Boston, but found no signs of Dorothy. With his search not yielding results, he suggested the family hire the Pinkerton detectives, which they did, and the Pinkerton detectives searched hospitals and places Dorothy was known to visit, questioned her friends and former classmates, all without any luck. After Keith and the Pinkerton detectives' search proved fruitless, they persuaded Francis Arnold to contact New York City Police Department. The police advised him to hold a press conference in order to get as much publicity as possible. At first, he rejected the idea, but eventually agreed on the 25th of January 1911. Reporters gathered at his office, where he informed them of his daughter's disappearance and offered a $1,000 reward, which is almost $30,000 in today's money. This was asking for information leading to her whereabouts. In the days after the announcement, police distributed circulars with Dorothy's picture, physical description, and information about the reward throughout the United States, Canada, and Mexico. The New York Times continued to cover the story on a near daily basis, and this publicity led to investigators receiving calls from people across the US who claimed to have seen Dorothy. These calls were investigated, but ultimately all proved to be false. The Arnold family received two ransom notes from alleged kidnappers who demanded upwards of $5,000 for their daughter's return. However, these were both proved to be nothing but hoaxes. At the end of January 1911, Francis Arnold was once more in front of the press, only this time he told them that he believed from the start that his daughter had been attacked and killed while walking home through Central Park, and that her body had been thrown into the Central Park reservoir. However, the police disagreed, and we'll look at that a bit more in a second. Despite these opposing beliefs, very few clues exist to tell us what happened to Dorothy, but let's look at some of those theories now.
I mean, before we get into the theories, when you were talking about her activities on the day that she disappeared, you didn't mention dress shopping.
You're right. It's nice to know you're paying attention. There were no published reports of Dorothy looking for or even purchasing a dress. This means she either lied about her plans, or she was stopped in some way before she could fulfill her plans. And just as an aside to that, it wasn't unusual for her to decline her mum's offer to go with her because Mary had been quite ill, so she didn't travel too far. So that's just another aspect to the case.
Okay. So now we've got that. Tell us some of the theories.
One theory is that Dorothy took her own life because she was heartbroken at being mocked by her family wanting to become a writer and believed herself to be a failure because two of her stories had been rejected by publishers. Her family, especially her father, were not supportive of her attempted writing career and would tease her about it. After her first rejection from a publisher, she was teased so much that she rented a post office box to receive correspondence from magazines and publishing houses. In November 1910, she submitted a second short story to McClure's. When that was rejected, her friend said she was, quote, dejected and embarrassed. 2 months before her disappearance, Dorothy asked her father if she could take an apartment in Greenwich Village to write. Francis forbade this, telling her, quote, a good writer can write anywhere. In a letter to George Grissom Jr., her boyfriend, Dorothy wrote, quote, well, it, meaning the short story, has come back. McClure's has turned me down. Failure stares me in the face. All I can see ahead is a long road with no turning. Mother will always think an accident has happened. Now, behaviourally, Dorothy was said to have been in a good mood on the day she left home. So this isn't necessarily a clear indication of her mental state, as it's been known that people who have decided to take their own lives often show signs of happiness at having made that decision. However, she had never shown any suicidal tendencies, and could simply have been happy at the prospect of a day shopping. Those that saw her that day said there was nothing out of the ordinary in her mood. Now that's the theory. However, Dorothy left no note and her body was not found at any of the likely locations for a suicide. None of the people who saw her that day reported her behaviour as out of the ordinary. And in a twist on this, some of her family believed that she may have committed suicide, not because of her failed writing career, but because her relationship with Grissom was faltering. One of the most widespread rumours was that Dorothy had become pregnant and had died during or as a result of a botched abortion and had been secretly buried or cremated. In early 1916, an illegal abortion clinic operating out of the basement of a home in Bellevue, Pennsylvania, was raided by police. The clinic, which became known as the House of Mystery, after numerous women from the area went missing after visiting the clinic, which was run by Dr. C.C. Meredith. A Dr. H.E. Lutz, one of the doctors who worked at the clinic, testified to the New York County District Attorney that Dr. Meredith had told him that Dorothy, quote, had died there after experiencing complications from an abortion, and that she, like many of the women who had undergone abortions at the clinic, had died. Her body was burned in the furnace. While the district attorney said he believed this is what happened to Dorothy. Her father said the story was, quote, ridiculous and absolutely untrue. Now, her romantic attachment leads us to the next theory, that Dorothy was secretly engaged to a man named George Grissom Jr., whom she met while she was attending college. Grissom, who preferred to be called Jr., was a 30-year-old engineer who came from a wealthy Pennsylvanian family with whom he still lived at the Kenmore Hotel in Pittsburgh. In September 1910, Dorothy told her parents that she was going to visit a former classmate in Boston. Instead, she spent a week in a hotel with Junior. Her parents only discovered the truth after Dorothy pawned $500 worth of jewels to finance their weekend-long stay. When she returned home, her, quote, parents forbade her to continue the relationship with Grissom because they found him unsuitable. Despite their disapproval, Dorothy continued to correspond with Junior, and letters from him were found in her room when they were searched by Keith. The couple saw each other for a final time in early November. Junior was on holiday with his family in Florence when Dorothy went missing. On the 16th of December, her family sent him a telegram asking for information about her disappearance. In his return telegram, he denied any knowledge of her whereabouts and claimed to know nothing of her disappearance. In early January 1911, Mary and her son traveled to Italy by ship to meet with Junior in person. They met at the Anglo-American Hotel on the 16th of January, where Junior continued to maintain he knew nothing of Dorothy's disappearance. During the visit, Mary and John demanded he give them the letters Dorothy had written to him, which he did.
Was there anything interesting in the letters?
Well, not according to her brother John, who claimed he destroyed them as they, quote, contained nothing of importance. When Junior returned to the United States in February 1911, he told the press that he, quote, intended to marry Arnold once she'd been found, and on the condition that her mother approved of the marriage. Mary later told reporters she would never approve of their union. In the same month, the San Francisco Chronicle reported that hotel clerks at the hotel where Junior had been staying had seen him with a, quote, veiled woman they believed to be Arnold. According to the report, the staff saw Junior and the veiled woman having an earnest talk they could not hear, and that the woman appeared greatly agitated. Now, there's no evidence the two had any kind of falling out or that Dorothy had run away to be with him, especially as when her room was searched, none of her belongings were missing. In the months after the announcement of Dorothy's disappearance, Junior spent thousands of dollars for ads in major newspapers asking her to come home.
Was he her only romantic interest?
That we have a name for. During the press conference, reporters asked Francis if it were possible that his daughter, quote, had simply run away with a man, as he did not allow his daughter to date. Francis denied this, stating, quote, I would have been glad to see her associate more with young men than she did, especially some young men of brains and position, one whose profession or business would keep him occupied. I don't approve of young men who have nothing to do. This was in a reference to Junior. So if there were others, we don't know. By the end of January 1911, the NYPD said they believed Dorothy was alive and would return of her own accord. Her father, however, called another press conference, telling them that he believed his daughter was dead. He claimed that she had been attacked and killed while walking home from Central Park and her body thrown into the Central Park reservoir. Now, he claimed he had proof of this, but never shared what that proof was. The police dismissed his theory, as in the days leading up to Dorothy's disappearance, the reservoir was frozen. Police searched Central Park, but found no trace of Dorothy. And that spring, when the reservoir thawed, the police searched the water, but never found a body. Now, this was not the only claim of murder. 6 years after Dorothy went missing, an inmate at the Rhode Island State Penitentiary named Edward Glenn Norris claimed he was paid $250 to bury a body that matched Dorothy Arnold's description. He claimed that an acquaintance known only as Little Louie hired him to drive a woman from her home in New Rochelle to West Point, New York. At the home in New Rochelle, Glenn Norris said that he and Little Louie were met by two men, one of whom was named Doc and the other whom Glenn Norris described as wealthy and well-dressed, which matched Grissom's physical description. Glenn Norris and Little Louie then loaded the unconscious woman into the car and drove her to a house in Weehawken, New Jersey. He claimed that during the drive, Little Louie told him that the woman was Dorothy Arnold. Glenorris also said that he recognised Arnold and was able to identify a signet ring on the index finger of her left hand, which matched the ring she owned. The next day, Little Louie contacted Glenorris to finish the job. When they arrived, Doc told the men that the woman had, quote, died at the home during an operation. Glenorris said that he and Little Louie drove the woman's body back to the home in New Rochelle, wrapped the body in a sheet and buried it in the cellar. Glenorris, he initially told this story to a prison warden who then referred it to the authorities. Upon subsequent interviews with law enforcement, he acted confused and claimed he knew nothing about Dorothy's whereabouts.
Did the police follow up on that?
They did. However, despite excavating cellars of several homes in the area, they never found any human remains. Dorothy's father denied Glenorris's claim, telling reporters, quote, so far it appears on the face of the man's story, he is talking utter nonsense. Some suspected the man had been hired by Grissom, but there's zero evidence to support this. Other theories include a suggestion that Dorothy had slipped on an icy sidewalk and struck her head, which left her in hospital with total amnesia, unable to remember who she was. However, there was no record of any woman matching her description in area hospitals who had sustained a concussion. Plus, the Pinkerton detectives and Keith had both searched all the hospitals in the surrounding area and found no trace of her. That Dorothy had been drugged and abducted, but this theory was considered unlikely as she was last seen on a busy street in the mid-afternoon, and as on the day of her disappearance, she was dressed in the height of fashion and was a familiar face in New York at the time. It seems unlikely she could have made it far without being noticed, especially if somebody was trying to like bundle her into a car or something. Now, remember when I said they found literature for transatlantic ocean liners in Dorothy's room? Well, the last theory for you to consider is that she eloped to Europe with a man, an unnamed man. However, agents searched marriage records but found none bearing Dorothy's name. And although agents searched the ocean liners themselves that were arriving from New York, they found no trace of her.
Were there any sightings of her?
In early February 1911, Francis Arnold received a postcard which read, I am safe, and was signed Dorothy, bearing a New York City postmark. Francis said that the handwriting matched his daughter's, but he didn't believe it was written by her, and that someone had simply copied her handwriting from samples that were featured in newspapers. Around the same time, a jeweler in San Francisco claimed a woman who he believed to be Dorothy visited his shop and had engraved a diamond wedding ring for her on the 7th of January with the inscription to AJA from ERB, December 10, 1910. The Arnold family lawyer, John S. Keith, later told the media that 2 months after Dorothy Arnold's disappearance, he got a tip from an attorney in Pittsburgh that she was in a local sanatorium. He claimed that he and two detectives traveled there but discovered the woman was not Dorothy.
Could her parents have been involved in the disappearance?
I see where you're going with that. Despite the time it took them to report her disappearance to the police, there's no evidence to suggest that they were involved in her disappearance. It's believed that Francis spent approximately $100,000 trying to find his daughter, even though he maintained the belief that Dorothy had been kidnapped and murdered on the day she disappeared or shortly thereafter. He died on the 6th of April, 1922, and in his will, he left nothing to Dorothy as, quote, he was satisfied that she is not alive. Mary, however, didn't share her husband's opinion and remained hopeful that her daughter was still alive until her death on the 29th of December, 1928. The only thing we know for certain is that Dorothy left her home in a happy state, went shopping, and promptly disappeared, never to be seen or heard from again. So I guess now it's my turn to ask, what do you think?
I mean, it's such a strange one. The fact that, like, her parents didn't contact the police for several weeks just seems crazy. But I don't know. I kind of want to lean towards the botched abortion, just because when her family got those letters, they could have said anything in there about her being pregnant and they just burnt them.
Yes, it's odd that they burnt them rather than returning them.
Yeah. Like, it leads you to think there's something suspicious in them if they don't want copies of them anywhere.
Yeah, and Francis Arnold was certain that his daughter was dead. Whether that was just his way of coping with it.
Yeah.
Obviously, we don't know.
But he was adamant that she'd been, like, attacked whilst walking home.
Yeah, I mean, she was a woman on her own carrying quite a large sum of money.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't seem out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah.
But if it was just a mugging gone wrong, there would have been a body.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know how much an abortion would have cost, but I imagine it wouldn't have been cheap.
Mm. But it's a bit odd that if that's where she was going that day, why she bought the chocolates and then a book. Maybe for convalescing, I guess.
Making it look like she was on her way shopping?
Maybe. But nobody she spoke to that day, her friend or the clerks that served her in both shops, nobody said she was in the slightest bit acting out unusual or came across as sad or distressed.
Mm.
And I would think an abortion, even if it was her choice, and it should always be a woman's right to choose, like, she'd still be a little bit sad, a bit nervy.
Yeah.
Unless she was just a very good actress, obviously, we don't know.
No.
And we'll never know exactly how many women died from botched abortions.
No. Because, you know, taking away safe abortion only leaves the illegal ones.
Yes. Not that we're in any way, shape or form appalled by the Supreme Court in America and even Congress, who refused to make it law that abortion was legal.
Yeah. Not the only country out there either.
No. Anyway, we shall not get into that rant.
No.
If she disappeared to marry, to go off with Junior or another man that we don't know about, she disappeared thoroughly with no belongings. And yes, $30 was a lot of money, but it wouldn't have lasted forever.
No, and I feel like even if you were going to run away, there'd be something sentimental that you would want to take with you.
Yes. Of course, there's not. It's difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, and also, what was she burning in the fireplace?
They just assumed that the papers were manuscripts, but yeah. We know she was getting those sent to a PO box.
Yeah, they could have been anything.
It could have been. But not calling the police straight away, certainly an interesting choice. Okay. So, final thought, are you sticking with the bungled abortion theory?
I think so. Even, you know, mixing in there that maybe she did go and see her boyfriend and she was covered up and said, here's the situation.
Well, he was in Florence at the time.
Yeah.
So, unless it happened by letter. But then if the letters were incriminating, why did he hand them over? I mean, we don't know, obviously, because they've destroyed.
I mean, her family could have potentially known, and that's why they didn't approve.
Yes, or he might not have handed over every letter.
Mm-hmm.
That's obviously also an option.
Yeah. Okay, so we're now going to pass this case over to you. Let us know what you think happened to Dorothy. There should be a poll somewhere with the podcast for you, or just let us know on social media. Still to come this month, we have my post on Calamity Jane. And for our patrons, we have After Dark podcasts on the women of the Allies and the Axis Nations, and a bonus podcast on pilgrimage too.
Wonder who picked pilgrimage as a topic. We are taking some downtime in June. As such, there will only be a Kenobi / Star Wars tangent podcast, After Dark podcast for women that have survived some form of tragedy for our patrons. If you would like to become a patron and support us, our levels start at just £1 a month. And for that, you'll get lots of bonus content. We always hate doing that plug, but needs must. Anyway, make sure to take care of yourselves and each other.